than hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. Hi, this is Bob Fitrakis coming to you from WGRN. And we're lucky today to have with us Joe Motil. Although, is it Motil? Is that correct?
It is. Yep, that's correct. Perfect.
I'm going to have to tell Mark Stansberry.
Please.
keeps saying modal.
Modal, model, motil. Yeah, it gets butchered.
And you've been involved in politics for a long time.
Yeah.
When I was running for city council a long time ago.
Yep. Got started back in 1985 when I was living on South Campus. Ran into some guy at the laundromat who was asking me questions about a house that had just recently, big double that had recently been vandalized. And it turned out that the owner of the property was a big landlord down on campus and hired some kids to vandalize it so he could justify tearing it down so he could build a larger development. And so he took me down to the development department with another person. And that was kind of like my first involvement with city government. And I really didn't know much about it. And this was in 1985 when I was renting an apartment on South Campus. From there, I wanted to buy my first house on either East Oakland or East Northwood, just north of Lane Avenue, a beautiful historic district, which, in matter of fact, I was involved with getting it placed on the Columbus Register of Historic Neighborhoods. But beautiful old homes built in 1900, early 1900s and such. And was lucky to come across one. And lo and behold, my neighbors and the whole street basically was just full of community activists. Former Judge John Marshall lived on the street. A lot of professors from the university and such. It was probably 80% were homeowners and 20% renters. And that's probably been reversed by now. But so that's really when I pretty much cut my teeth with community involvement is when I lived on North Campus area, University District.
Now you've circulated your petition there. You're running for mayor. Why mayor?
I think it's just a natural progression. I mean, I've run for city council. My first election was in 1995, and I like to take credit for being involved in the last election when an incumbent lost, and I can proudly say that I participated and actually helped that happen. And while serving on the University Area Commission, and going to these meetings at city council and seeing what went on and so forth, I just felt like, in order to really have an impact in the community, that I needed to be sitting in one of those seven leather chairs up there in the city council chambers. So that's when I first ran for city council in 1995. And since then, I've been on the ballot, four other times, technically, on the ballot for state representative in a general and a primary, and a primary for council in 2003, and then in the general election for city council in 2019. So 37 years of involvement with city government. And I probably, I've got such a great understanding in terms of how it functions and how it misfunctions that I just felt that running for mayor was really the next office in progression for me to pursue.
Well, one of the questions, of course, should always deal with the question of housing, fair housing, affordable housing. How would you be different than our current mayor, Mayor Ginther, who's appears to be running for re-election?
Right. Well, Mayor Ginther, first of all, in 2019, when I was running for city council, he proposed a $50 million bond package for affordable housing, which was approved by the voters of Columbus. I actually proposed a $250 million bond package. And I want people to know that $50 million bond package that was voted on only lasted up until the end of 2021. So for the entire year last year of 2022, those funds were completely depleted and there was no money for the city to put into affordable housing. And yet, I mean, I knew it was a drop in the bucket. So they decided to put a $200 million bond package on the ballot last year, which was approved as well. And there's going to be about $80 million of that that is going to go towards just building affordable rental units. There's a breakdown, like $50 million goes towards affordable home ownership, $40 million to preserve affordable housing in certain neighborhoods, and then $30 million for housing for people dealing with the homelessness. And basically, Ginther and City Hall's plan is tax abatements for luxury real estate developers, creating set-aside units at 10 and 20% for those making 80 and 100% of the average median income. And in September of this year, it kicks into 60%. But those aren't even required. I mean, the developers can actually buy out of providing those affordable housing units if they wish with a certain amount of money. So they don't even have to comply to it. And the other thing is the bond package, and then there's zoning reform. And as far as I'm concerned, and everything I've read and what most people know, that's Ginther's plan. I have proposed for almost 2 years now that the city and county, that they allocate $60 million of their American Rescue Plan funds, both of them, and that the Columbus Partnership earmarked $60 million as well. So you would have $180 million immediately to help finance affordable housing units. I suggested, again, like I said, the $250 million bond package in November of 2019. Right now, the city of Columbus, they collect 8.43% of their hotel motel tax that's earmarked for affordable housing, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. I have suggested that they increase that by 25% because a lot of that money goes to the arts and cultural organizations. But Bob, as you may know, they just passed an ordinance last year where there's going to be a ticket tax, where so they're going to be receiving funding from this ticket tax, and also they're going to be receiving funding most likely from there's going to be like a master plan for the arts, and they're talking about funding that with public dollars too. So they don't need to be giving out all that money from the hotel motel tax to the arts and the culture arts and such. I mean, I'm all in favor of the arts, of course. I'm a musician and I've been collecting art my whole life and such, and supporting the arts. But there's better use for this money. I've talked about repealing the tax, the what's called community reinvestment areas or tax abatement districts in the Short North, Grandview Crossing, AC Humco, The Quarry, Kenny and Henderson. I mean, these CRAs, they're draining revenue for public education, and that just basically intensifies gentrification. I'm also a member of the City of Columbus's Columbus Coalition for Rent Control, and we want to put on the ballot a ballot initiative, citizen-driven, that will create a fair housing code that creates a system of incentives for property owners to offer fair rents and disincentives for abusive rents. And as you may know, we are going to put something on the ballot to control rent, and the state legislature stepped in June of last year and restricted, prohibited any municipalities from having rent control. They heard what we were doing, and basically that we were one of the reasons why that was put out there. I've suggested also that the 80-member Columbus Partnership, with its assets of tens of billions of dollars, they should establish their own affordable housing trust fund. I would also ask lobby Intel and tell them to follow the lead of Amazon, who committed $300 million from its housing equity fund to create, and they created about 3,000 new affordable housing units. I would use the availability of Columbus's water and sewer as leverage for Intel to put to give money for affordable housing. I would present an ordinance to enact what's called an empty homes tax, and this is going to help increase the supply of needed housing. And the goal of this is to incentivize property investors who leave homes vacant until the market is in their favor, and then they list their prop, they rent or rent the property. I mean, it forces slum lords to renovate housing that's sitting vacant, and that contributes to crime and deteriorating neighborhoods. And the money that is collected from that tax would go into an affordable housing trust fund. I mean, there's so many things that you can do, and they're just not thinking outside of the box here in the city. There's a land bank that there needs to be different restrictions on flipping these properties and who buys them. investors and such. So there's just so much more that needs to be done in terms of what the city has proposed, which basically to me is really nothing. So I mean, again, they talk about talking outside the box and not leaving anything on the table. And that's exactly what they're doing. They don't want to listen to what advocates like myself and those that are boots on the ground who truly understand this, but they're listening to what all the nonprofits and what the developers are telling them to do and what they're able to do in order to make their excessive profits.
All right. A lot of issues there to look at.
It's a complex issue, but there's a lot of things that a lot of different cities are doing. And Columbus, you know, with all their Democrats running, you know, I'm a Democrat, but the Democratic powers in the city of Columbus that claim to be progressives, they're the least progressive city probably in America when it comes to addressing things like affordable housing, homelessness, campaign finance. I mean, you name it, democracy in general. It's sad.
Yeah, I know you were in an article where you referred to Tacoma as having good policy. Now thinking, why can't Columbus be as good as Tacoma?
Right. And that was in terms of the homelessness and the unsheltered. They have they've created, I think it was seven villages, micro villages for tiny homes in Tacoma, Washington, and throughout the city. And these are probably roughly, I don't know, 120 square foot or so. But there's photographs and things you can look at on the internet of them. They're nice. They're clean. One of the things that, you know, like you said, I stated that out of that $30 million from the bond package, I would like to start constructing these micro emergency shelters or tiny home villages. And they would like provide security for them. There'd be hand washing stations, garbage services, bathroom facilities, electricity. You could have a centralized kitchen, potable water. I mean, it's, you know, and you have services there too for the people that are living there. You know, health, mental health services as well. You know, right now, our homeless encampments throughout the city, we use Southeast and Mount Carmel go out to these encampments and help those individuals that are living at them and provide services. But we need to do better. We need to do much better. And, you know, it's funny. You may recall in May of 21, CBS 60 Minutes did a story on Columbus, Ohio's homeless crisis. And they were interviewing and taking pictures of homeless citizens that were living like near Ohio Stadium down on campus. And you would have thought that, you know, the exposure of that news story itself would have moved city government to address the homeless citizens right there. I mean, in their backyard. And here we are on the, you know, the world news and showing how bad our homeless situation is in Columbus, Ohio. But it didn't do a thing. They didn't do anything. Instead, you know, in late spring of last year, I was invited to the Hare Park homeless encampment by one of its founder, Emily Myers. And, you know, and I was there when they remediated the camp. They sent in the remediation team. They had a small track hoe, dump truck, 25 to 30 police officers, 20 cruisers, people from the city attorney's office, people from the development department. I mean, are you kidding me? To remove in there at the time, there was probably five people there, and the amount of money that was spent just to for their bulldozer diplomacy in removing those people is just unbelievable. The remediation itself cost about $42,000, but can you imagine the number of police officers and all that, and the cost that was? And here we are with a shortage of officers in the city of Columbus, and we're pulling them away from neighborhoods to put them out there, you know, to make sure everything went okay. I mean, and I even asked one of the police officers, I said, don't you think this is a little bit overkill? And he shook his head, he goes, yeah, absolutely. And I'm just like, and I just shook my head and I thought, this is unbelievable. And so then again, I was invited to another homeless camp, Camp Shameless, which was near Children's Hospital. And many people have heard of that. They were kind of organized by the grassroots organization First Collective. And they were talking about sweeping that one and remediate it and stuff. So we met sometime in the early summer and discussed, as you know, the a plan to set up tents in the front yards of Shannon Harden, city council president, city councilwoman Shayla Favor, and city attorney Zach Klein's front yards as a protest in the lack of action and policy that the city has. Five of us got arrested. Four of us went to jail for about 10 hours. And miraculously, out of nowhere, the city finds $350,000 to house those 14 people, residents of Camp Shameless, in a hotel on the east side. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, at a minimum, we should be providing funds for portable toilets, washing stations, no less than a 10-yard dumpster for these existing camps around the city, as long as they can be properly serviced. And the city of Columbus, actually, city council and the mayor, they put out $875,000 in a community development grant fund for three fancy downtown public restrooms in downtown Columbus. But we can't find the kind of money, you know, just to provide portable porta-johns, washing stations, or clean up these camps. And then the city files a violation of sanitation issues and orders and against them. Well, what the hell do you expect? What are you doing to make these places clean? Why aren't you doing anything about it? What are they going to do with their clothes? They can't wash them. They end up just putting them in a pile and throwing them away after a while. They don't have the facilities to wash them. What are they going to do with their trash and stuff and debris? They don't have sanitation pickup like we do when we put our cans out, our trash receptacles on along the street. So what are they supposed to do with it? So why aren't you doing anything about this? So again, it's just a lack of policy. It's a lack of priorities, and a lot more can be done. It's reactionary and temporary solutions for our unhoused that the mayor, it's just no longer acceptable. We need viable plans and policies put into place. We need a mayor of the people who actually works with and understands the needs of the homeless, has actually been to these camps and knows what needs to be done.
All right. You're listening to Bob Fitrakis. I'm speaking here today with Joe Motil. You're listening to The Other Side of the News, WGRN 94.1 FM, The Green Renaissance. And Joe's been speaking in detail about the plight of the homeless in Columbus, Ohio. Is there some sort of corruption that's going on here? Is it pay to play? Is it so embedded that it doesn't even seem like it's corrupt?
Yeah, it's been going on forever, ever and ever. And it's funny, here recently, you know, with the householder thing at the State House coming up, the trial starts next week. The FBI actually said that the Ohio State House is the most corrupt state house in the United States. That's out there on the internet. They actually made that claim. And my feeling is the FBI really needs to just walk two blocks down Broad Street to City Hall and look into the corruption that occurs down at City Hall. I mean, this has been going on for just forever and ever, and they seem to just get away with murder down there. One of the things that I want to do as mayor is to create what's called an Office of Anti-Corruption. I mean, you know, City Hall and some of the mayor's directors, they unethically bend over backwards to accommodate these developers and contractors while no one questions them. You know, middle management city employees, they got to take orders or they lose their jobs. So they basically give contracts to whomever they're told to. And not to mention the conniving way some developers, contractors, and professional service vendors get around laws and rules because they're so connected politically powerful city lobbyists that you and I know both of, like former Mayor Michael Coleman and former city council president John Kennedy, just to name a couple. Ginther, as you know, has held office at City Hall for about 15 years. Before that, he served on the Columbus School Board education for 6 years. And the unethical and corrupt activities have consistently accompanied his political career since chairing the Columbus City Schools Audit and Accountability Committee during the 2004 famous data scrubbing scandal. In 2014, a sports junket paid mostly by a city lobbyist that went to jail for federal charges, led to an FBI and Ohio Ethics Commission investigation. That same lobbyist and Ginther campaign contributor was also found guilty of extorting money in the form of campaign contributions for Ginther and other elected officials from the city's red light camera contractor, Redflex, that many people remember. The never-ending saga of Columbus Crew's under-the-cover deal persists, with promises of a new sports complex to replace Mapfre Stadium that never materialized. The cost to the taxpayers to build the new soccer stadium jumped from $50 million to $113.9 million. There was a recall effort that accused Ginther of gross incompetence for his tax abatements that defund public education and failure to provide oversight of the Columbus police in a breach of public trust. There was the State Route 315 Ohio Health Ramp. For 2 years, details were purposely hidden from the public by the city of Columbus about the closure of the ramp. And only weeks before the ramp was announced to be closed forever, the public was notified. Ginther's wife just happened to be a longtime executive at Ohio Health as well. Ginther also accepted donations to fund his State of the City address from city vendors. So, and how can a mayor appoint a compensation committee to decide on what his salary should be? Ginther declined 5 requests to be interviewed by police internal affairs during an investigation into a member of his security detail golfing with him. And this is funny. Ginther actually had 54 tee times in 2020, and he had 166 between 2016 and 2020 at the OSU golf course. So is he mayor of the city, or what is he doing on his in his spare time? And then, of course, as you know, the Little Turtle Roadway project that I was very much involved with, Ginther was not part of that investigation, but his public service director, Jennifer Gallagher, I filed charges with the Ohio Ethics Commission against, and those charges are still pending regarding her involvement with her husband's contract being given to that project. I mean, and then you had here just a couple of weeks ago, there was the recent $170,000 gift to a developer for a privately owned completed project at the East Market's trolley barn. And city officials determined that they couldn't grant the money to him, but spent months to figure out a way to cough up the $170,000. And the reason was, they said, the owner of the project has bank obligations that must be met in November in order to maintain the owner's good standing in business and the community. I mean, seriously, are you kidding me? This is why we're giving somebody 170 grand just so they can keep their good standing in the business community. I mean, it's just, it's pathetic what goes on here. So some of the things I'm proposed for my Office of Anti-Corruption, I want to dissolve the city's existing ethics office, which is currently non-functional when it comes to addressing and enforcing any kind of city ethics and conduct policy. I want to replace the ethics officer with a nonpartisan inspector general who would investigate alleged unethical and corrupt behaviors of city employees and city elected officials. I want to establish a strictly confidential whistleblower hotline and also present legislation that would discipline city employees and elected officials who are privy to unethical and corrupt activities, but they do not report them. And as another part of, if you remember, Bob, this ethics office and this executive order that Ginther put into place in 2016 was all the result of him getting caught in 2015 and 2016 with the Redflex issue and the center plate when they went to the OSU Wisconsin game at in Indianapolis with Rayfield and the busload of people. And so he put out this executive order to make it look like, oh, we're going to make sure everything's on the up and up here at City Hall. I'm going to write this 4-page executive order, 3 or 4 page, and say, you know, we're going to take care of conduct and unethical behavior. So I also want to prohibit the solicitation or acceptance of campaign contributions from people having a financial interest in city business while such business is pending before council, and prohibit former elected city, county, state, and federal officials and former directors and administrators from the city from serving as legislative lobbyists. So that's where I'm at with that right now. I'm sure there'll be more to it, but we got to do something to stop this. It's gotten out of hand. The pay to play has been going on forever.
All right. Well, that just about wraps it up. We're going to have you back. And Because just the corruption stuff, I think, is so massive.
It is.
Pick up the whole show.
I mean, I've actually spoken directly to people that have retired from the city public utilities department who have told me they were, in so many words, told, this is who's going to get this contract. And so you're going to make sure you work the numbers that they get it.
All right. So, Joe Motil, thanks for being on the other side of the news.
My pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity, Bob, as always. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you. Thanks. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.